Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers, Season 2. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I was a Lost in Space character across any of the Lost in Space, I would unfortunately, but very truly, be the 1998 Penny Robinson, Lacey Chabert.
I not all I want is for you to style your hair that way. Okay, I am Joanna Robinson, and if I were to be any Lost in Space character across any Lost in Space iteration, I might be 2018 Penny Robinson, who is really into books and junk and doesn't know shit about science.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were any character in the many iterations of Lost in Space, I think it would be the 1998 Dr. Smith, played by Gary Oldman, but probably also the spider version.
Good old spider Gary Oldman.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert for that 20-year-old movie.
I'm sad that none of us are like future Will Robinson, played by Jared Harris.
But not always by Jared Harris.
Dubbed by an American.
That was just reliving all of 1998's Lost in Space was weird. This episode is, of course, a Lost in Space episode. We're going to talk about previous Lost in Space, but also focus on the new Lost in Space Netflix series, which just dropped last week. It is 10 episodes of Lost in Space goodness. We're going to get into, I guess, complete spoiler detail in the second half of our show. But the first half, we're going to do our usual house cleaning segments, and then talk about all the different Lost in Space iterations, including the one Joanna wanted to make sure we talked about, Swiss Family Robinson, which had at least some of my favorite Disney film moments as a child, but I don't know if we're going to talk about the novel or not. Stay tuned until that part of the podcast. But first, Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
Gosh, we do. Okay, first of all, I want to say there's been a recent uptick in falling down reports from Twitter.
It's been really tough today.
Yeah,
the spring hubris.
Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, the ice, it's icier out there than you think it is the lesson I'm taking away from Twitter, including this happened yesterday here in California. We got this crazy hailstorm. If I had gone outside, I too would have fallen down, but it doesn't matter because I already fell down a long time ago. Okay. This review comes from Plumhead27, 5 stars. You've cursed me. Don't Fall Down was a simple goal for 2018, or at least I thought it would be simple, as I have not seriously fallen in quite a few years. A few weeks ago, however, as I was walking down the stairs to the street, when I slipped on a step and fell hard on my elbow, luckily nothing broken other than my pride. I was ashamed to have failed the task during the first half of the year, but I figured that was that. And then I went to the Arctic. Dun, dun, dun. I recently spent a week in Svalbard, where I slipped on ice and fell on the same elbow, slipped on a snowy slope into an ice cave, how Will Robinson of you, and fell down a small flight of stairs on a fishing boat. So naturally, I've come to the conclusion that this podcast has cursed me. I feel like for that, I should bring my review down a star, but considering how much I enjoy this podcast, I can't bring myself to do that. The hosts are all extremely entertaining, and even though I'm a big Game of Thrones fan, I don't care for spoilers, so I'm mostly in this for the wildly entertaining off-season tour. The topics are always interesting and explored in great depth. Keep up the great work, even as partially killing me. And then I didn't see this PS until I got to the end of this. But Plumhead27 said, PS, I'm currently still in Norway. If Joanna Reese is on the show, could she please do it in her wonderful Norwegian accent? Thanks. I don't recall my wonderful Norwegian accent. So I will think about that. But I don't have one on deck right now. Plumhead27, I apologize. But I do want to circle back a little bit and say, Plumhead27, I realize that you accuse us of cursing you in all in good fun. But I got to say, if you take your ass to Svalbard, we are not responsible for any kind of unusual slipping and falling you might wind up doing. So
into an ice cave.
Yeah. Oops, I fell into an ice cave is the most yada, yada, yada part of that story.
That's it.
There's been entire movies written about that. Yeah, yes. fantastic. Good job, everybody, staying upright. Please leave us reviews. And if I guess what we've learned this week is if you want Joanna to do an accent, it's got to be up top.
Yeah, lead with
front
the accent.
Load that. Front load that. Neil and Dave, did you fall down at all?
No.
No, still unfallen.
I am 99% sure that I'm going to fall at Con of Thrones.
Oh, that would be a place to do it.
I can see it in my mind. It's just that's probably what's going to happen.
That is the next time in my life that I know I have to rush to be certain places at certain times, and that's going to have me on high alert, because usually I have the luxury of planning my life with leisurely travel times to avoid things like falling and discomfort of panic. Yeah. That's interesting things to learn about Dave. Neil, let's go to your segment. We talked about this already, where we could keep talking about Con of Thrones, I think.
Yeah, specifically about Con of Thrones. The schedule is out. It's been out since last week when I told you guys this last week. But I'm happy to report that I now have 30 things on my schedule, and it's a lot. And I've already become mad at things that I can't attend. Like, this is where everyone should be, like, emotionally invested in Con of Thrones scheduling. Anyway, the schedule is out. Con of Thrones. the second thing I wanted to talk about, which is something that was happening in our Twitter feed today, which is Daniel Portman Facial Hair Watch 2018. Now, I was busy doing stuff all day, ran a bunch of errands. So, I'm curious as to what the hell was going on there.
Oh, well, so our friends, speaking of Con of Thrones, our friends who do the Burlington Bar reaction videos discovered via some other show that Daniel Portman watches their reaction videos. He's like, it's a bunch of drunk Americans or like whatever. It's my crap Scottish accent for Daniel Portman. But so they were excitedly sharing that. So I was like, oh, Daniel Portman, I'll watch this. Like, I'll watch him talk about our lovely friends from the Burlington Bar. And I noticed how long his hair was and how beardy he was. And so I like looked up on Instagram to see sort of when he grew his hair out and his beard. He's actually looking very like Kit Harington, I would say. His hair's long and a little curly. He's got a little top knot going on. He's got some beard. And I was just saying that's very...
Is it like as if it's fair to make pod... more attractive?
Well, that's the question, because I think those are very, that's a very unpod-like look. So my question was, should we be worried? They're still filming Game of Thrones. Should we be worried about the actors who have like grown their hair out or cut their hair or whatever it may be? Someone else has pointed out that Conleth Hill, who plays Varys, you know, he grows his hair out in the off season, but his hair has been grown out for a while now as well. And so someone's like, I'm worried he dies early and often because he grew out his like shaved Varys pate. So, yeah, I mean, I think all sorts of all kinds of things could be gleaned from the state of people's hair. Someone else suggested maybe there's a time jump and Pod, you know, is starts like trying to look more like Jon Snow to like. I don't know, getting good with Sansa. Who knows? But
people really want Pod to hook up with Sansa.
Great, I'm for it. But the thing is, what we do know about this final season, what I know for certain, is that they are not filming in order. So even though they are still, they've already filmed the end of season 7. So even though they're still filming.
Season 8.
So even though they're still filming, they've already filmed the end. So maybe like Daniel Portman just did all his scenes already. I don't know. Who knows? I'm just saying.
Yeah, that was actually my first thought as you were describing what he looks like now. Was they probably are, he's probably done shooting, even though the show may have X amount of days left.
I mean, he's definitely done shooting, but like the beard goes back to like last October. Like it's been a while. That's what I'm saying. So like, I mean, you know me, Neil. I do, my hair investigations are thorough.
That's true.
They are in depth. So I did look into this.
Or maybe he hasn't shot anything yet.
Maybe. Who knows? They're in hell bent on keeping us guessing. I'm just gonna
maybe it's fake hair.
Okay.
Maybe he has extensions.
I'm just going to plant this seed, which is Podrick Payne, Death Watch, 2019.
Ooh, that hurts my chest.
Well, I mean, considering everybody's on Death Watch for 2018, I guess I wasn't ready for Pod to be singled out in that way. But yeah, you know, going to be a lot of death.
But I mean, like,
and Varys Death Watch, I guess.
I think we a working theory we have now is maybe everyone or almost everyone dies in the finale, possibly, right?
Yeah.
And that's something we've discussed before. But I guess
or they've been dead the whole time.
Yes. And the polar bears were just the friends we made along the way. But the possibility that people die super early, because you can't like just have everyone die in the end. So you probably got to drop a few bodies right at the beginning just to like show this is like the Infinity War theory of storytelling, just to show how serious a threat the Night King is. I know he brought down a wall, but he's probably going to have to drop some bodies right at the top of the season so that we like really feel the impact of what he could do. And Pod would be like a quote unquote inessential, but also really heartbreaking like loss.
Oh man, what if it's Arya? People would die.
It's not going to be Arya.
I mean,
but I'll remember this.
I'm gonna
write this down. And if she dies in the first episode of season 8, we'll play this clip of me going, "It's not Arya, you fool," and you can feel good about yourself.
It wouldn't be the first time that I've predicted something randomly and had it come true. So you never know. Neil Stradamus lives.
It's true. It's true.
Anyway, that's all I had to. I just want to know about Daniel Portman. That's my whole segment.
Well,
all right.
What we do know is that he watches the Burlington Bar reaction videos, and you should watch them too.
Yeah, about prepping for Con of Thrones, which you're going to come to in Dallas.
May 25th through the 27th.
Correct. Especially on Friday, when we'll be doing a live podcast.
Yeah.
Meeting and greeting
and hanging out with Kate Dickey.
Greeting and hanging out with Kate Dickey. It's going to be a big Friday, and most importantly, my retention of Neil's segment appears full. Well, that brings us to Lost in Space. I don't know. I feel like it's very easy for me to categorize which Lost in Space series I like and which ones I don't like, but what I realized that I hadn't realized before this week when I smashed watching all versions of them into a condensed period was just how loose I think the concept of Lost in Space really is. Once you get beyond the idea that it's a family lost in space, everything else sort of goes out the window or could be reinvented or could be commented on or twisted upon. Even the initial series with how it treats things like, you know, the allegiances between Dr. Smith and the robot who tried to kill them, but then become basically domestic partners that try to kill them eventually, or occasionally. It's all very odd, but apparently its roots, the sci-fi series roots, which aired in the late 60s, and at the time was more popular than Star Trek, even though we assume that Star Trek is this gigantic hit that's spun off this gigantic franchise. Lost in Space used to be king of 60s space television, and that was all because someone decided to take the Swiss Family Robinson to space. Joanna, did you revisit Disney's Swiss Family Robinson film adaptation or the novel?
It's not Disney's novel, but I did not.
I'm sorry, the German novel. I was just, who actually wrote it?
I think it's a German.
Yeah, good.
and we should say that Swiss Family Robinson get their last name from Robinson Crusoe. Basically, like, if your name's Robinson, you're going to wash up on a strange shore somewhere. Robinson
it was Johann Crusoe, David Weiss.
That sounds Swiss to me. Is that not Swiss? Anyway. You can draw a line from Robinson Crusoe to Swiss Family Robinson to a comic book in the 60s called...
He was Swiss.
Called Space Family Robinson, and then Space Family Robinson became Lost in Space. And then Lost in Space became the shitty Lost in Space, and then it became the Netflix Lost in Space. But So I did not need to revisit the Disney version of Cecily Robinson because I saw it so many times as a kiddo. You know, if something has your name in it, you get really excited. My last name is Robinson, in case you missed that. And yeah, so I watched it a bunch. But it does have like the same... Lost in Space is basically a shipwreck story. It's just they're like, but what if it's a space shipwreck? And so, yeah. Is there anything you want to talk about specifically about the Disney film, Dave?
I mean, it has a lot of things that do end up getting brought over to Lost in Space, but I'm wondering if it's too generically shipwrecked to like really draw more comparisons outside of that. There's definitely more boys.
Yes.
And the whole thing has a bit more masculine adventure book feel to it that Lost in Space swaps out for late 60s futurism. But outside of the name, do you think that there's a lot to ascribe from Disney's Swiss Family Robinson romp to the space series?
Well, here's what I'll say. I will say the initial Space Family Robinson comic book and then the Lost in Space when it started in the 60s on CBS was trying to be Swiss Family Robinson, and then it quickly became not that. In that, Swiss Family Robinson doesn't have an antagonist in the form of Dr. Smith, was part who was a character. He and the robot were added to Lost in Space after the pilot in the 60s. So that usually you just had the Robinson family out for some space romps, and then in episode 2 they added Dr. Smith and the robot. Dr. Smith and the robot and Will Robinson became the focus of Lost in Space, pretty much entirely due to the actor Jonathan Harris, who played the original Dr. Smith. He rewrote the character. But in the original Swiss Family Robinson, your antagonist is a tiger. So it's this like relentless, you know, it's like survival on an island and this relentless, just faceless evil sort of tiger figure. What the Dr. Smith character in the 1960s Lost in Space does is introduce a far more interesting form of like antagonism and villainy. And once again, that's something that Jonathan Harris like really created all on his own. And that then becomes an integral part of the Lost in Space lore because you have Gary Oldman, Oscar winner Gary Oldman doing it in the 90s film, and then Parker Posey doing it in the Netflix series. And so like Dr. Smith element is something that was sort of coincidentally added later. And so but initially Lost in Space could have been kind of a boring, like they cast Guy Williams as John Robinson, the head of the family in the 1960s. Guy Williams is Zorro. Like that's what they were going for. They were going for this very like staid sort of swashbuckle, like adventuring. You know, you've got June Lockhart, who's like the mom from Lassie, and you've got Zorro, and then you've got a bunch of like cute kids, and they're gonna go adventuring. And then Dr. Smith and the robot show up, and then it becomes this like crazy camp fest. It becomes something else entirely. And so it's just a really interesting way in which I don't think Lost in Space, I definitely don't think Lost in Space would have endured as like an IP that people were interested in redeveloping were it not for the Dr. Smith stuff, the robot stuff, all of which is not from Swiss Family Robinson. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. Totally. And then I wanted to just clarify something. I think Dr. Smith's in the pilot. Did they reshoot or re-air something with the first Lost in Space?
They might have re-edited him back. Well, something that June Lockhart said in an interview that I watched this week, because I watched a lot of interviews, was that the pilot that they originally shot had so many climactic, insane things happen, and I would say the same thing is true of the Netflix pilot, that they redistributed them over like 5 episodes. So it's possible that they just recut everything, and that's how Dr. Smith and the robot ended up in the pilot, but they were not initially there.
Yeah, that makes much more sense, because I rewatched the first, I think, like 5 or 6 episodes of the 60s to try to like prep about how things differently become established. And what you're talking about is so evident in that first episode, where it's like all the Robinson family stuff is like dark and like serious, and like think about the wonder of what it would like to be weightless. And then all the Smith stuff is like hamming up like what we traditionally think about, like what will like William Shatner level of ham to him getting himself in and out of scrapes within like 5 minute period. So by the time we get to the Lost in Space Netflix iteration with Parker Posey doing Dr. Smith, Dr. Smith has a bunch of different gambits, but they don't start coming to the fore, I guess, until the end part of the series. Whereas original Lost in Space, Dr. Smith has like six failed ideas in the first two episodes, and they all lead to potential cliffhangers where the family's in danger. And the family's just like wooden nothings, except for Will Robinson, who is doing like a Leave It to Beaver in space because the child actor is probably just taking direction. The director doesn't know. But it's really interesting to see the series sort of what it became, but starting out as this rough hodgepodge of like very, very slow space action that peaks to a cliffhanger and then goes to commercial and then comes back like it didn't happen again. One of the like act breaks I remember specifically is everybody comes out of cryostasis pretty much okay, except for Miss Robinson, who passes out because stress of being a woman, I'd assume, because they don't actually talk about why, because they just start the next one and her first line's like, "No, I'm okay. What are we doing out of hyperspace?" And I'm like, "Oh, the simpler days of television commercial breaks." We're just like, just make the woman faint. Why not? So it's really easy. It's really interesting to see how, or what Joanna was saying, how they sort of, as the series was going on, realized that they could play to these other elements that they accidentally created originally when trying to do sort of a riff off the Swiss Family Robinson, which I guess is also like Star Trek being Wagon Train to the Stars, but neither of those I think really succeeded in living up to its elevator pitch, and we're all the better for it. Neil, did you get a chance to watch any of the 60s Lost in Space?
I did. I mean, I watched the first episode.
Yeah.
You know, just to get like a, just to get a jog the muscle memory, because I have watched it before. I've watched several episodes. And it is, I guess, what's fascinating to me, and Joanna makes an excellent point about the whole them focusing on Will, the robot, Dr. Smith, and that is actually, I mean, sounds like they chose correct, because that is sort of the linchpin of the franchise. So I guess what surprises me is how consistent things are. A lot of the story things that unfold, or the different dynamics, even though the casts and whatnot have changed, because there wasn't, how many kids were there in the 1960s one? It wasn't the same amount of kids, was it?
Yeah, it is. It's Judy, Penny, and Will.
That's right. Okay. Well, yeah, it's just very consistent. It's fun.
It's always interesting that Judy always looks like Mrs. Robinson until like the 90s. Like it's like Lost in Space. One of the greatest things about the Lost in Space 60s TV show, I think, is the design, whether it be from like the sets or the planets, or when you eventually get to see that the actual outfits are like purples and yellows and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was always really weird to me that they never really separated Judy out into her own sort of space fashion. That's a weird thing to bring up, but that was the time to bring it up if I was going to bring it up at all.
Judy was like, you're right that like Maureen, John, Judy, and Penny in the 1960s wind up being like nothing. And that's apparently like Guy Williams was really ticked about that. Like he eventually like, I think by season two was basically like a walk on role, like barely had anything to do because it was just the adventures of Dr. Smith, the robot, and Will, and with occasionally guest starring Penny, played by Angela Cartwright of Sound of Music fame. And I think she's like Brigitte, one of those, Marta, one of those. The Lost in Space gets. It was only three seasons. It was like abruptly canceled due to budgetary reasons. Like basically the guy who created it, I think his name is Irv Allen. He wouldn't, CBS wanted to cut the budget a bit he was like, no. They were like, even though it was highly rated, they were like, okay. So like everyone left season three thinking they were coming back for season four. And then there was never a season four. So there's never like a series finale of Lost in Space. That being said, even though it was only three seasons, they did 85 episodes because they did like, wow. I don't know, 28, 29 episodes per season.
Was this Supernatural?
Yeah, there's a lot of episode, like when I found out it was only three seasons, I was like, that's crazy, because I've watched like a million reruns, but it's because there's 85 episodes out there. But yeah, when it gets into the second and third season, first of all, it's in color. Like first season is black and white, second and third are in color. And then you really do see that this is a show that was made around the same time as like The Monkees or Gilligan's Island, because you get like weird psychedelic stuff, but like the campy, like family friendly psychedelic version. You get Dr. Smith. There's one episode where Dr. Smith gets turned into a celery stalk. Because there's like a race of vegetable people who want to turn all the Robinsons into vegetables. So you've got Jonathan Harris in like green makeup and like leaf, like acting like a celery stalk. So like, you know, if you enjoy drugs, I would say you might enjoy season two or three of Lost in Space. Yeah. So that's that. But
and they're on Hulu, right?
Are they? I believe it.
I think that's true.
Great.
That's where I watched them.
Nice.
I just watched a lot of YouTube clips of interviews of the cast.
No, I'm learning so much right now.
The guy who, I mean, if you do nothing else, I would recommend you watch the interview that Jonathan Harris, the guy who created Dr. Smith, on Conan, an early Conan episode, when the new movie came out. They had the original Dr. Harris on there and or Dr. Smith on there. And he was like, he was, because some of the original cast members have cameos in the 90s movie. And he said he was offered it. And he's like, I don't do walk-ons. I don't do bit parts, darling. By the way, the guy who plays Dr. Smith is like, he's from the Bronx, like that, you know. And I was watching another interview with a kid who played Will Robinson, and he does a really good Jonathan Harris impression. And he was asked, like, he said something that Jonathan Harris has said all the time is when people ask him if he's British, he goes, "No, darling, I'm not British. I'm affected." So he's just like an amazing human being.
Oh my God!
Go watch as many interviews with him as you can, because it's just he's like, yes, my character on the page is just this mustache twisting two-dimensional villain, and I was bored as hell about that, so I said no, I don't think so. Also, all the insults that Dr. Smith has for the robot, where he calls him like alliterative, like you bobble-headed booby, and all this stuff that he says to the robot, these are all things that apparently, I'm sorry, this is the last of my Jonathan Harris trivia, apparently he kept a pad by his bed at night, and he would wake up in the middle of the night and like come up with another classic robot zinger and write it down. And you know, everyone agrees that all came from him. Like everyone, there's no, like, no one's like, oh yeah, the writers did some of those. They're like, nope, that was all good. Johnny, yep,
he
Johnny
did
all
by
those.
Himself.
I want to be a place in my life where part of my job was to think up robot insults.
ooh, that'll really get his robot.
That'll grind his gears. I'll tell you what. Oh. Lost in Space, the 60s version, of course, going for that many episodes, is the longest iteration of Lost in Space, and therefore got to deal with the camp and the problems of extending that sort of storyline into the future. Something that the next iteration of Lost in Space we were blessed with didn't have to deal with. Although it attempted to start a franchise, it bit off maybe too much than it could chew with time travel, like I did with that metaphor. And we got Lost in Space 1998, the movie, starring William Hurt and Joey from Friends and Lacey Chabert and Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle, right?
And Roller Girl.
Wait, is he Dewey? He looks a lot like Dewey, but I think he's not. I was like, is that Dewey? And then I looked it up. I was like, that's not Dewey.
The kid?
Yeah, it's not Dewey. He looks just like Dewey, though.
Is that like Dewey's brother? Who's the kid? His
name is Jack Johnson, and he's not Dewey.
Oh, is he the musician?
Oh my God.
He grew up to become a slow jam in Hawaiian, Jack Johnson, making banana pancakes. Yes.
So not Dewey, but everybody else who you forgot was in this movie, up to and including Heather Graham, is totally still in this movie, where the Robinsons are a family who get stranded in almost the exact same way as the 60s cast ends up getting stranded in their pilot when Dr. Smith corrupts the robot, but that Dr. Smith gets left on the ship and then the robot goes crazy and then Dr. Smith has to shut it down and they all end up getting lost in space, except right when you think, oh, they're going to crash land on a planet and start being Swiss Family Robinson. No, they come across this spaceship full of spider aliens that they blow up, causing a chain of events that can only be stopped by Will Robinson in the future and a spider Dr. Smith, played by Gary Oldman.
Oscar winner, although it's Gary Oldman.
Yeah, it sounds like I might have skipped over some things in the plot. I really didn't. This movie is super plotty. I don't know if it thinks it's being fun or if it thinks it's being really serious and its joke lines are just enough levity to get us through it. Ugh. But Lost in Space 1988 is real confusing. It's a real confusing watch, especially after having, digested the Netflix show and see how it is possible to like update this story. Yeah, it has one of my, I forget what his character is. It's this character that Penny finds on the planet. It's a completely CGI character. This is a pre-Jar Jar Binks completely CGI character.
It looks like a little
horrible
cartoon monkey.
It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Literally the worst thing.
It changes colors and stuff because texture mapping is, like, I guess, cool in 3D models in this area in the 90s, but it is real bad.
I think it's like Barp.
Anyway.
Like, it's like named for a sound he makes.
Right. It exists next to the robot, which is real and practical. And you're like, okay, maybe we could just get away with Barp. But that's because you haven't seen Spider Gary Oldman, who's also completely CGI and very bad.
It is.
So,
you know what's fascinating about this movie? It exists in such a weird place in history, like in the way technology was evolving for cinema. Like, this movie came out 5 years after Jurassic Park, for example. So, like, CGI was good, but not everyone had figured it out yet. So, like, the studio that made this Lost in Space, I'm sorry, who it doesn't matter who it was. It's probably Paramount.
New Line.
It was? New Line? Crazy. Yeah. So, they didn't know how to do CGI. So everything ends up looking like a cutscene from like the 1991 Duke Nukem game. So that I found really fast because the effects are so bad. But then you remember that there were good movies with like CGI effects that came out prior to this movie's existence that were way better.
And Phantom Menace is literally 1 year later, which granted isn't perfect, but is
still
a step in
a hell
the correct
lot
direction
better than this. Just the pod racing scene alone. But yeah, so it's tonally very 90s, I guess.
Oh yeah. It's got the X-Men problem where they're like, how do we redesign things? We'll just put them in black leather. Yes, that is a redesign.
It's okay, so apparently the character's name is Blop. It's Blop. It's like B-L-A-W-P. It's so bad. I read somewhere that they were originally going to do a practical effect monkey, and then it didn't look good enough, so then they came up with fucking Blop, which looks terrible. But something I found out from the Blank Check podcast did an episode on this movie last winter, and something I found out from them, which led me to watch it on my own, is that there is, you know, there's a section in the back half of the 98 Lost in Space where Maureen and Penny and Judy just like disappear.
All the men go off to solve the bubble.
That's because they're having their own side adventure that gets cut from the movie, and their side adventure is them, because it's like a time warp flash forward, they meet a grown-up Blop, which is enormous. It's like a giant King Kong monkey, and it's like, I think at one point they call it like a lizard monkey in the movie, and you're like, where did they come up with lizard? It doesn't look like a lizard at all. Grown-up Blop is a terrifying enormous lizard monkey, and I recommend you all go watch the deleted scenes from the 98 Lost in Space, because they built a big Blop. They did it. They did it. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you should go see it. Anyway.
I just got more interested in the Lost in Space 1998 movie by hearing that there was apparently a troubled production.
Something that I think that this Lost in Space very crucially introduces to the Lost in Space lore that we understand now is the dysfunctional family. Like, I maybe you, Dave, you definitely watched more of the 60s Lost in Space than I did, but like, I would imagine that the Robinsons, a 1960s nuclear family, they were like, they didn't have any problems. Right. They were
right. Not the way that like dysfunction's built into the family unit from there on out. You're right.
That's what I mean. So, yeah. So like in the 98 like thing, we get this idea of John Hurt's John Robinson as like a bad dad who doesn't go to his not Dewey's science fair. And, you know, Lacey Chabert's Penny is like a petulant, disaffected teen who's pissed that she doesn't get to kiss boys and go to the mall anymore. She has to go in space. This mission sucks. I agree, Penny. So all of like that like dysfunctional family Robinson is from the 90s thing. But the thing that the 90s movie does carry from the 60s that I really like is Gary Oldman's treatment of Dr. Smith. He's a little darker than the 1960s Dr. Smith, but he's still got that like mincing British. Like my favorite line reading he does is when they like go through to the future. I think it's the future or whatever. They see like a more advanced version of the robot. And I think he turns to the original robot and goes, "My aren't we the poor country cousin?" I was like, something like that. It's just like, so good and like inappropriate, and I like a lot of what Gary Oldman is doing until he becomes a Spider-Man,
and then it gets really good.
And then it gets tremendous
because Jared Harris is there.
But anyway,
Neil, why don't you take us through the Jared Harris nonsense?
Well, no, not even the Jared Harris nonsense. The one thing that struck me about Lost in Space 98 was it's really bad from like the jump. Like the first sequence, which has Matt LeBlanc and that other guy whose name I'm totally blanking on.
Lenny James.
Yeah, Lenny James. Both, I guess, like Lenny James is a good actor. Matt LeBlanc is whatever. He's fine, I guess. He was Joey. But the dialogue in that scene is just nails on a chalkboard bad. And the visual effects are so intensely bad. Like, I can't escape this feeling that, like, immediately within like 2 minutes, I was like, oh, I forgot how really, I just forgot how bad this movie could be. And,
there's a whole period in the late 90s where I feel like there were a lot of those movies. It's like it's hard to pick them out in your mind because thankfully your trauma center allows you to like brush them over. But every once in a while when you're forced to revisit one, you're like, oh, yeah, I saw Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Things like that happen.
Well, and I think ultimately that's what makes the great ones great, because you go back and watch them and they're still just as good. But man, when they miss, there are some movies that are so product of their time. Like, back to the Jared Harris thing, like, who casts Jared Harris and is like, this guy's too British, we need to dub him?
Do you know,
like,
Jared?
I don't understand the story behind that.
He looks like Dewey.
I think he looks like William Hurt, actually. Like, with the beard, I think he looks a lot like William
That's
Hurt.
True.
The two of them are just sort of, like, blondely bearding next to each other. Ethan Anderton of Slash Film Fame was very interested to uncover this truth about Jared Harris. So he interviewed him, I think, around the new AMC series, The Terror, that Jared Harris is on, and he asked him about this. And Jared Harris told Ethan Anderton that he didn't know he was being dubbed until he was at the premiere.
Oh my God.
And watching it.
They did that to Jared Harris, who probably wasn't, you know, Jared Harris at that point, but
he was still he was still Richard Harris's son. He was still like little Jared Harris. Anyway,
poor guy.
Yeah, poor guy. The other thing that they do, so like the Don West Judy Robinson thing is always like, you know, it's sort of this like Swiss Family Robinson does the same thing. Like, you have to have someone who's not a Robinson so that there's like hope for procreation in the future.
Yeah, just in case they can't escape and they have to reconstitute humanity.
And Dr. Smith doesn't count because he's like super gay and gay for a robot. So like,
yeah, he and the robot.
So the in So Certainly Robinson, you know, there's like a young woman who washes them ashore because this is a family of all young dude boys. In this, we have Don West, who I think in the original 1960s is like friends with John Robinson. And in this, he's Joey from Friends. But basically, you've got the Judy Robinson, Don West, like, will they, won't they, is also part of the Lost in Space lore. I think the TV show, the 1960s TV show, becomes deeply uninterested because they're like, none of you is a robot or Dr. Smith or Will Robinson, so we don't give a shit
about
you.
And we can't show you kissing anyway, so fuck off.
Fuck off. But that, you know, this becomes, and Neil, I think off podcast, you were describing the, let's say, aggressive tactics.
I mean, he's basically space date rapist. Like, it's weird and it's off-putting.
And it's terrible that he's rewarded for
it. And then that, you know, even as a kid seeing this movie, I was like 15 when this movie came out. That never made sense to me. I was like, Heather Graham doesn't deserve this.
Well, I mean, he makes a good point that he's like, I'm literally the only like fuckable dude that's not a gay dude.
I know.
Or
it's
family.
Interesting that they wrote him as a character who found like confidence in that. That to me would be crushing anxiety to be like the last man. Like,
I'm
I would
the
not
only
talk
one.
To anyone.
But yeah, Joey from Friends is terrible. Blarp is terrible. I think Heather Graham is fine in this movie.
Sure.
Mimi Rogers, who's a once and hopefully not future Mrs. Tom Cruise, is also fine in this movie.
Sure. William Hurt. William Hurt. Like,
William Hurt, I feel like, is phoning it in
William
a
Hurt,
bit.
I mean, I'll agree with phoning in, but I will say they hired him to do exactly what he delivered, and he showed up and gave William Hurt every scene that he's William Hurting.
That's true. He hurts all the way through.
It hurts all the way through. From his initial introduction, like ponderously judging his family members' test results, to flailing at a CGI Spider-Smith. It's William Hurt all the way through.
I just love that in IMDb, it credits Gary Oldman as Dr. Zachary Smith / Spider-Smith.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? William Hurt does have one of my favorite line deliveries. I forget what it is exactly, so I can't do it verbatim, but the way he tells Matt LeBlanc that he wants him to go through the planet and use the planet's gravity at the end, it's like, we could go through
the planet.
The planet. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, the planet's blowing up. Say everything faster.
It's so stupid. Yeah, he's pausing, and it's so stupid because it's like a callback, because earlier Joey's like, we go through the sun. And so, like, he didn't have to, like, explain to him. He's just like, we go through the planet like we did before, remember? Let's just go through it. Yeah, you're right. It's an amazing line reading. Yeah, so the 90s Lost in Space. So, as you said, Dave, this was supposed to be, like, the beginning of a franchise of, like, where are they lost now?
Yeah.
And that did not
work. Yeah, and it was so bad. So bad.
Did not
just like right out the gate. So
no, but what's weird is that it did make like a good amount of money, didn't it?
Okay,
it has the distinction
of this is how Lost in Space 98 can be remembered. It is the movie that finally knocked Titanic out of the number one spot after 15 weeks.
Yeah,
with its opening week haul of like something like $20 million, but it took Lost in Space to finally pull Titanic down after 15 weeks at number one. So something needed to do it. That was Lost in Space 98.
And then it made no money in its second weekend.
Well, yep, and then no, word of mouth got out.
It it grossed $136 million worldwide. So,
yeah, that's not...
moderate. Wikipedia is deeming that a moderate box office success, but not... good enough, Heather Graham. Nope.
Not good enough.
Not good enough, Joey from Friends, space douchebag.
I kind of
our next okay, lost. Yeah, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, our next Lost in Space is also not good enough and only exists in a unfinished pilot version that you can see on YouTube and around the internet. It was directed by action star John Woo for the CW in 2004, and did not get picked up for, I think expense was mainly the reason. I've watched it, and it's not that it's not good. It's just a pilot set in 2004 that has unfinished special effects. So if you assume that all those things were going to be sussed out as it goes, it really kind of presents an interesting version of Lost in Space. It also has the Robinson patriarch be a war veteran, which the Netflix show carries over. So all the good stuff the Netflix show gets to do with everybody taking William Hurt's absent dad and making it an absent military dad who was actually away because he was serving the planet or the country or whichever version of Lost in Space you're watching. That actually carried over into the John Woo version. Adrian Palicki is our Judy. Penny is a baby. There's a Dave Robinson who seemingly was created just to be left behind when the Robinsons get lost in space, because he does not get lost in space with them in the pilot. There's no Dr. Smith, and the robot is something Will created to stop bullies at his school that he ends up sneaking on his Jupiter. Yeah, it's a really interesting take. It's was developed around the same time as Battlestar Galactica, and it feels like that's very similar. As a matter of fact, it was so similar to Battlestar Galactica, even though they were redeveloping at the same time, that after the John Woo version didn't end up going to series, they sold off the set and it became the Pegasus in Battlestar Galactica when they needed another Galactica. So that's what happened to the John Woo Lost in Space. Was I the only one that subjected myself to this pilot?
Yes. I looked at cast photos.
I looked at the IMDb page and I found that it was actually shot. The director of photography was Robert McLaughlin, who has done a bunch of Game of Thrones episodes.
It's like when, so this Lost in Space, because there's no Dr. Smith to do the sabotage, what happens is their colony ship is attacked by straight up aliens. There's like pre-Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Palicki kicking butt with some martial arts she probably shouldn't know. There's John Woo-like action sequences of people getting sucked out windows and whatnot. It definitely shows this could have been eventually an action version of Lost in Space. I think the problem is that it was for the CW and not for like sci-fi, because I can't think of anything on the CW in 2004 that would have made me think a Lost in Space would have been a fit for them. It does have the family drama of a CW show right up front, which is why it might be kind of hard to start watching the pilot and be like, did Dave say this got good? Because like there's seriously 30 minutes of setting up family drama that's going to pay off over the season they never get. But I think once it does get to the inciting incident of the Lost in Space series, it showed some promise that just was never meant to be.
I just don't really, I really don't understand why they thought they could do Lost in Space without Dr. Smith. Like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
There's a possibility that Smith could have been brought in, but I also think that there was a possibility that they could have developed David to be the Dr. Smith character. So there would be a rotten Robinson rather than an outside force.
He's like the Kevin McAllister. He's like, leave me a home, will you?
He's like trying to get his dad's support, and his dad like wants him to be better. And then he like this huge disaster happens and he basically saves Will, but then kind of gets left behind and his future is kind of uncertain.
Maybe
I don't know. We don't know what's going to what would have happened.
Maybe his middle name is like Zachary or Smith or something like that, like in a Joseph Gordon-Levitt Dark Knight twist reveal.
You should use your middle name.
I like that name. Something that we should mention about these three Lost in Spaces is that Dick Tufeld, I think is his name, voiced the robot in all three of those. In the John Woo one, in the 90s one, and in the 60s one, same dude, Danger Will Robinson, voiced the robot. He did not voice the one for the Netflix show because he is, dead.
That's what happens when you get old.
Yeah. I for the record, a little bit of Robin's family lore. Definitely my parents would always go, danger, Joanna Robinson. That was a thing. That was a fun thing. If your name is Robinson, it's a fun thing that you could say to your child. All right.
Anyway. Yeah, it's much better than being a slow person compared to Speedy Gonzalez for all of your life.
Okay. Can I just say, I was putting away spices in my kitchen earlier this week, and I don't know why. I don't know why this is when I thought of that, but I was thinking, oh, I can talk about being a Robinson and have this legacy of like Robinson things, and then I can ask Neil and Dave like if they have similar things. And I was like, oh no, then I have to talk about Speedy Gonzalez, and that feels like a racial trap, and I'm not going to bring it up. So I didn't, but you did. So there we go.
It is sort of a racial trap, and although there have been lots of interesting discussions about Apu on The Simpsons, this is the Lost in Space episode.
Sure is.
So I think we're gonna put a pin in that.
Just barrel right through that one.
Very interesting pin, and move on to Lost in Space Netflix show. All right, guys, I think we're gonna have to insist that you at least have already dipped your toe into the Netflix Lost in Space show. And we've tried to give you some background on what Lost in Spaces are. If you want to go in cold, definitely do. But I think we want to talk about the entire season of the entire first season of Netflix's Lost in Space, just because I think it's an interesting way that this show decides to spin off its various iterations of both the Robinson, Smith, and Robot into a science fiction show that I think feels like a lot of previously existing science fiction shows. Just what science fiction shows, I think some of us disagree on.
Oh, really?
But I'm going to go first with my spate of ones not included in the title. To me, Lost in Space feels a lot like the 1994, I believe it was ABC series Earth 2, about the recolonizing of another planet. The reason why it does is because they also had one of those like Range Rover things, like the Jupiter each has a chair. Each Jupiter has a chariot in this new Lost in Space. And that's essentially our motor vehicle for getting to other sets so we could break up our Robinson family so they are not spending their time in their Jupiter while they're lost in space. Earth 2 had a similar thing. Earth 2 also got a little bit weirder. It had two different species of aliens that had mysterious motives. But Earth 2 did have a Dr. Smith stand-in, or a Dr. Smith-like analogy of a maybe evil member of their settling party. And the reason Earth 2 comes up a lot in my mind is because that was Tim Curry, who could have done a Dr. Smith in a Lost in Space. And I'm pretty sure that's what he's doing in Earth 2. Also, I would say there's like little shades of Terra Nova in there. In terms of also people settling another planet or a group survival drama. And then same with Falling Skies, which was the Steven Spielberg alien show. Same reason, group survival drama, except that one also had the general can we or can we not trust aliens debate, which is applicable for the Lost in Space Netflix show, as the robot is now an alien robot. He is not a robot created by Will or created by any sort of American Earth-based space system. But I think Joanna found some comparisons to another more recent sci-fi series.
It's not more recent because like Terra Nova and Falling Skies were definitely came after this show that I'm about to mention and were definitely like accused of ripping off the show that I'm going to mention. I don't know about Earth 2. Earth 2 looks like definitely predates it.
Guys should watch some Earth 2 clips on YouTube, by the way.
I'm pretty sure I watched Earth 2.
I'm pretty sure I watched it and it was amazing.
Clancy Brown looks super dreamy with like a lot of extra hair. A show that I felt like it sort of owed the most to is Lost, and I'm certainly not the first nor the last to make that comparison, but like thinking about it more, I'm like, well, but doesn't Lost certainly owe a lot to Swiss Family Robinson? So like, is it really fair to say Lost in Space is ripping off Lost when like probably Lost, which maybe like owes its title Lost in Space, like I don't know, but it's, you know, definitely got its stuff from the shipwreck narratives of Swiss Family Robinson, Robinson Crusoe, stuff like that. So, but the way in which the show uses flashback to emotionally underscore. It doesn't do it as sort of like nimbly as Lost does or frequently, but that struck me. And then the way in which this series, at least for these 10 episodes, it's not just the Robinson family unit. We have an entire cast of, multi-ethnic characters, as it should be. This is the future. It's not just white people in space. Are populating this. It might as well be an island. It might as well be a mysterious island that they've crashed upon. Occasionally they go into the woods and discover a new threat, and that's very Lost to me. So, and then their escape mission oriented. And then I kind of felt like we could talk more about Parker Posey as Dr. Smith, but I think she was leaning a bit more Ben Linus than the original Dr. Smith, and I love Ben Linus, but I actually don't know how I feel about that. Neil, were you reminded of any other shows?
Oh, for sure. And we mentioned it in the last segment. It's the 2004, right? 2004 Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons, actually. I mean, there is some design fluidity, I guess, in some of this modern sci-fi. Although a lot of the design elements of like the Jupiter, that got me into more of like a Christopher Nolan Interstellar sort of design.
It's very 1960s future, right?
Yeah.
The chariot and the Jupiter.
But like, you know, pushed forward a little bit with like a little bit more of what we know technologically. Right. But no, the Battlestar Galactica thing was very interesting because specifically about the robot, making the robot that Will in this show finds and making him an alien robot, felt to me a lot like the sort of, you know, arc of Battlestar Galactica, where you have these potential enemy / potential friend robots that aren't exactly what they seem, and there's a lot of debate about whether they can be trusted or not. And then so of course the community of people traveling together, which I thought was in the, you know, the, it played a lot of the, played out a lot of the politics of, you know, there's another guy on another Jupiter who now he's in charge of this group. So I really enjoyed it. And I liked a lot of the little changes that they made. I liked them making Maureen, one, a character, which some of the other ones don't, I guess. Yep. That's actually pretty consistent through all of the other Lost in Spaces, that Maureen's sort of a nothing character. And so what they did is they split the John Robinson stuff in half, and they made her the scientist who is like pivotal to the mission, and they made him the shitty dad, but he's also a soldier, so he like has some skills that come in handy. So I thought that was a great change.
Yeah, because Maureen Robinson is technically a doctor in the 90s one as well, but like that barely comes into play.
Yeah. And also like the casting is amazing. Molly Parker is fantastic in that role. Like she's like, she feels perfect for that. Making one of the kids adopted and never really saying much about it, I thought was really fascinating.
She's not quite adopted. She's Maureen's daughter.
She's Maureen's daughter. See, I didn't even pick up that much. But they never address it until the end, where he's like, oh, she's not my biological daughter, but I'm proud of her, whatever family were doing.
When Don meets Judy, or like an early part of the Don Judy interaction, he's like, what's your relationship with that dude? She's like, that's my dad. And he's like, yeah, but .. And she's like, yeah, I was born before he was in the picture, you know? So like, they never talk about her dad, but like, yeah, that's a,
but it's just little changes that are clearly pretty well thought through. And it feels like it lives up to both its moment. Like now it lives up to what we should expect of a really good show now. And it also carries forward a lot of the same stuff, like Will's relationship with the robot, Dr. Smith being a total weirdo and having a thing about Will's robot, and the sisters sort of being at odds, but also being very supportive of each other. I thought, you know, it's a really good show. I will say, on a visually impressive, it's probably up there as one of the more visually impressive show originals that Netflix has put out so far, at least in the show's side.
It It definitely looks expensive. Like, there's a part where they're in the pilot where they're where Will and John are trekking through snow, and it looks like Lord of the Ringsy. You know what I mean? They're like on a mountain peak.
Yeah.
The other show that I forgot to mention that it reminds me of is The 100, which I don't think you guys watched, but it's a similar.
It's one of those shows that keeps getting on my list of things to watch.
Other
stuff gets piled on top of it.
The first season, I think, is worth watching, but the 100 is about like a space station that basically like of like new colonists that crash lands unexpectedly on a planet, and you do have like elected leaders and there are political tensions. So like one of the running gags in the early episodes of the Netflix Lost in Space is like, I voted for the other guy, which I thought was really cute. And so that those kind of politics of like who should really be leading, there is a Maureen Robinson figure, very strong parallel in the 100. So that's something that I really liked the first season and like half the second season, but there are a lot of parallels for like space politics for me. I didn't love the series as much as Neil did. I think my main complaint would be one that you hear a lot with Netflix shows, which is like the Netflix bloat. I feel like this could be a 6-episode season, or certainly every episode I think could be trimmed, especially the pilot could be trimmed a good deal down. I feel like some of the dire straits that they find themselves in, like a tar pit or being frozen in ice or whatever, just drags on a little bit longer for a kind of peril that you know will be resolved. Do you know? Like, we know.
Well, here's a question.
Yeah.
It's something I have the same feeling, but that this is what I've been trying to balance out. Would I have had the same feeling about something like Lost if I was able to binge Lost?
No, you were off pod. We were talking about this and you said it would have done better as a real show, I think is the language you used. But I agree with you. I had the same thought. I was like, this shouldn't be a binge show. This should be a week to week show. And then these characters would have a better chance of really, you know, really sinking in, and like the Watanabes or like whatever would like, you know.
Exactly. And I like the conclusion of tar pit forced conflict resolution. I just don't like that it takes us a whole hour to like get there,
right,
when I know that there's other stuff happening.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it does. That is an interesting case for it, for not binge watching it. Maybe we can save people if people are still listening, but for some reason haven't watched the show yet, even though we did the spoiler warning.
There's maybe a tar pit at one point. We won't tell you what happened.
Maybe do the episodes one at a time. I think that's a fair criticism. It does suffer from getting long in the midsection. I watched it like half and half because of the way they distributed screeners. So I like watched the first 5 and was really rabidly ready to watch the 6th episode, but like then it was like a week before I got to watch the rest. And I know, poor me. But I think having that break actually made it better.
I think that that's a good point. I think the pilot, especially like if you just watch the pilot and you're like, this is a little rough, I don't really like it. I do think it gets better after that, especially as we introduce more characters, though I am worried about season 2. But and like there's stuff in the pilot like John, like our listener, Will Robinson falls into an ice cave and John's like, you good down there? You good? Cool. I'll be back later.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's different.
Insane thing to do to leave your 11-year-old who's petrified. Anyway, that being said, I love these kids. I think of all the Lost in Space kids we've ever had, this is the best trio. We've got Maxwell Jenkins as Will Robinson, and he is great. I often hate kid actors, and I think he's great. Mina Sunwell is Penny Robinson, also really, really good. And Taylor Russell is Judy Robinson, also great, I think. Like, those three kids. Penny Robinson is really hard to not make annoying, and she is not annoying at all. I find her delightful. So
she's very earnest.
Earnest and intrepid, you know?
Yeah, they played her, and I like that. And I like that the other sister, you know, is super smart. I'm trying to think about, because she's the doctor, right?
Yeah, she's a doctor.
Dr. Penny Robinson.
Dr. Penny, 18-year-old Dr. Penny Robinson.
That's the thing that I was like, wait, what? How long does it take you to become a doctor in the future?
I think as part of their training, like, because I think they talked about years of training for this mission. I think she got, what Wikipedia is telling me is that she got accelerated medical training and sort of, I think it's Victor Dar brings, he's like, how many cases have you actually done by yourself? Two? Good job, Dr. Robinson. You're still a junior doctor. So, yeah. But I mean, these various missions of like, let's go, you know, find some fuel here, find some fuel there. Like, I think that's a good active way to approach this shipwreck sort of, you know, dynamic. Is like, it's not like, what's the new crazy monster we have to deal with this week? There are at least two monsters that they encounter. Mm-hmm. If you don't count Dr. Smith and the robot, but like missions, like, let's break off. That's a very Lost thing to me. Like, let's break off into this little group.
Yeah.
And go try to accomplish this thing to try to save ourselves. I think that's a good thing to do. Is this where I get to talk about Don West and Judy Robinson and how creepy?
Sure.
Well, it's weird. It's weird now that I know she was 18.
Yeah.
Which, because apparently they said it in the show and I didn't catch it. Because I've read that character as being much older, but okay, now it's weird. Wait, and so in the show, how old is Don West?
Well, the actor's 37. I was being charitable and saying he's like 35, because no way that dude is supposed to be in his 20s. That dude? No. Right?
Yeah, that's the weird part. Is
they could have given you like an 18 and a 22-year-old, preferably a 20 and a 22-year-old, something like that, or like 20 and 28-year-old. Like, there are age gaps that I would be okay with. Like, I think...
But they all sort of involve her being older.
It would be
I will
great.
Say this, is that the John Woo one kind of goes in the opposite direction, because the West pilot is like obviously younger than Pulaski, who's also the taller than him. So there is, if you do want to see how they could go wrong in the other direction, the John Woo romance is also kind of like, these two people are either like, one of them's too young to be in this profession, or something's just wrong.
Yeah. And there's something that I couldn't remember, because this is, to me, feels like one of two different things. Like, either when they were writing the show, they didn't think about it, which feels hard to believe, or they have thought about it and they are going to address it. Like, there isn't like a, there's just like a flirtiness between them, right? They don't have like a romantic moment at the end, do they? Or did I totally blank that?
What it feels like to me is that at one point that was there, and then they cast younger, and then they tried to strip it out. But it's just kind of there in the plot anyway.
She's still the...
Because, like, it...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, she's...
Well, I think I...
please, you go ahead.
What Joanna's picking up on is completely correct, because there is, like, a chemistry there, and they are put in situations where that chemistry can be fostered, or where one of them is supposed to be worried that the other one is in, like, a perilous situation, which is... coming in the grand history of Lost in Space in the 60s, that's about as much caring as we could like have gotten on the screen at that point. I don't think that they meant to be super explicit with it, because I felt that that would have gone into like overt creepiness, but what is there is like just enough that there could be something there, you know?
I think it's something that we might see in like a season 3, Judy is 20 by then and he's like 37, still not great. But the comparison I was making is elsewhere was like, she's kind of the Leia to his Han, where he's like, I do things because I get paid for them. And she's like, no, we do things because they're right, Don West. And he's like, all right, princess, I'll do things because they're right. You know, you will help redeem me. It's also like a Sawyer on Lost sort of thing. He's this like rogue scoundrel, which is such a much more interesting interpretation of Don West than any other iteration of Don West, who's just
because it's like an interpretation of Don West.
Yeah.
We're really trying.
He has like an arc to do. Okay, and so this is where I want to talk about Parker Posey, and
I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on Parker Posey.
It's weird because, like, the concept of Parker Posey as Dr. Smith is what got me, like, the most excited about this series, which, as far as I was concerned, we didn't necessarily really need. And she's done so much good work as like these sort of zany over the top villains, my favorite being in Josie and the Pussycats. But she's not doing that here. Like the hamminess that she could be bringing, she's not bringing in. Maybe you'd think that that's like a tonal misfit, but there are ways in which it comes through, like the flashback with Selma Blair. Like that struck me as like the degree of like slight camp I would like to see Parker Posey bring more of to her character. I like her manipulation. I like the way she like enacts her schemes by manipulating other players around her. I like that very occasionally she does the right thing, but almost always for self-serving purposes, but maybe not. But there's just like an extra layer of like charisma that Parker Posey usually brings to something that I don't feel like she's bringing to this.
I think she was almost playing it like broken. She wanted to play the character more broken than crazy, you know, or more broken than sinister, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what I got. There's this thing that she does where her mouth is almost always open, and it's all about which way like the different corners of her mouth are pointing as to like if whether or not she's paying attention. That sounds like a really weird thing to say about a female actress in this show that I just watched for a few hours. I'm sorry. But that's what I kept getting, is because they have these moments where like the camera will rotate around her and it looks like she's doing nothing. But obviously that's Parker Posey's choice for whatever it's going to be. And it ends up being like a sociopath, like a lost little girl sociopath is somewhere in that character. I'm just not sure it comes out until like episode 9. And by that point, we have so many other things to worry about that like most of Parker Posey's story in the first season has to be hidden by the nature of what it ends up being. And if we would have seen that in the pilot, although it would have been much more interesting, a lot of other of the surprises of the season would have surprises, quote unquote, would have, kind of been left out. But like the idea that she is the person who's just looking for a new beginning because she's accidentally pushed this snowball down a hill that has started her having to kill people was compelling to me. But again, I'm as worried. That doesn't mean I'm not worried about season 2, because it seems like they're out of humans that she could kill. So I don't know if you double back and now you have to make her super into the robot and go camp, or what the next step is. It worked for me, but it worked for me in this one arc. It's hard for me to project it into the future.
I guess I just miss those, like, you don't need to like be Jonathan Harris and take over the entire show, but I do miss those Smith one-liners that like Gary Oldman got in the 90s movies too, you know, like
Parker. Yeah, Posey, she wasn't as fun.
Yeah, she's not as fun, and I feel like she should be a little bit more fun in her scheming whateverness. Like I would say even I think Ben Linus was even a little bit more fun than she is. And which is weird because I think Parker Posey is a genius and usually I support everything that she does. So I don't know. I think I want a little bit more like Dazed and Confused alpha bitch Parker Posey. And I don't know what's going to happen with the other settlers that we meet. It seems like maybe they were one season and done, but I liked a lot of them.
Yeah. That is it. The ending is weird. The ending, I think, is where it sort of stopped it from being a really great show. Like, I think if they would have continued on with the other colonists and like the whole colony gets lost again or continues to literally be lost.
Yeah.
I think that's more interesting than them going to the alien robots worlds, which is what it appears have happened there at the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the colony is still lost because they get sucked into like that black hole, right?
No.
After the alien attack. Isn't that like in the pilot where like you see things exploding and then it goes and then they're just like completely off course?
Is it?
No. Did I make that up?
I thought they were talking about the threat of the black hole in the back half, and that's why.
Right. She figures out that they're by a black hole.
The Resolute had to leave, lest it get sucked into a black hole.
Right.
So you feel like.
And my interpretation of the ending of the final episode is that the Resolute goes off on its. Well, the Resolute is just sort of hanging there when the Jupiter 2 gets sucked into the secret alien portal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the Resolute, I guess, maybe they're going to come look for them, but that seems implausible.
I mean, don't... Victor,
or the Resolute like, fucked off to their normal destination.
Victor waited for them, but I don't know that he'll, like, go after them. He's
yeah.
He's got his other constituents to think of. But... Oh, and I should...
Well, I mean, they can go after them, though, because they have the alien engine in the Resolute.
Mm.
Which I thought was another interesting twist. Like, that was another BSG thing to me, where it's like, there is, like, an original sin of humanity, like, doing something to fuck with aliens and or robots, and this is what causes all the problems. So it's our hubris that we really is the villain.
Ooh, our hubris is the villain we met along the way. Dave, can I share the thing you said to me about the season ending?
Sure.
Okay, Dave and I were arguing over whether or not this was lost. This is like a Lost homage. And Dave was like, absolutely not. And I was like, yes, definitely borrows a lot from Lost. And he says, if the season, you were on like episode 9 at that point. So was I think. And you said, if the season ends with a cliffhanger, like they pull up to the alien robot planet, I'll take it back.
So I had to take it back.
Sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
And then like an hour later, I got to copy paste that and send it back to Dave, which was really satisfying.
So the reason why Joanna might be right and it's like Lost is because it tried to thread a mystery through all of its season. The reason why I didn't notice until the very end is because that is the least compelling thing about Lost in Space, the Netflix series. The kids are great. I'm interested in the actual colonists sciencing and stabbing their ways out of like water eel problems. That's all great to me. I kind of don't give a shit about the alien robot. Like in the world of Lost in Space, where you have like other planets and other species, and you have these people trying to colonize, and you can't contact your orbiting ship, just to also be like, also guys, aliens crashed to Earth as the Christmas star, and we stole their engine so we could recolonate a planet, and we've been doing it, but they want their engine back. Maybe there might also be half of them that just don't understand that we're sentient beings. It's just, it seems like too much. The others was very the others was very clear. The smoke monster was like genius in its unclarity yet simplicity. There's too much on alien robot life forms that is unresolved. The mystery box is too large, I think, for it to be a thing that I'm interested in. It's just like telling me that there could be another season of Lost in Space could be about anything is basically how I feel having watched the first season of Lost in Space. I don't think I learned anything about the greater mystery of humanity and its relationship to alien technology drives.
I will say that this is the only part I disagree with is I did care about the robot in the context of like how it changed the dynamics of their group. Like people didn't trust the robot. They were scared of the robot. Like them dealing with that I thought was really interesting, but I never cared where the robot came from. And then at the end, yeah. I was like, really? Like, I didn't even...
That's a better way to say what I was trying to say.
Yeah, it's like I cared about the politics of the humans interacting with an alien robot and whether or not they, like, I mean, Will essentially makes it kill itself. So that's dark.
I got, like, really upset when Will made it walk off a cliff. I thought that kid really sold that. Like, I care about the robot in the context of how it matters to Will. And as, sure. like, his...
Oh,
like,
yeah, that kid's great.
How he operates as his like pseudo metal space dad,
replacing the shitty dad who was never there.
Yeah, this is
just like Spider Smith.
My friend Kate Leth posted this thing, this little tweet thread where she called it Lost in Space, aka cucked by a robot. She said she wrote, can't lift that box, and then robot emoji, here, let me get it. Can't teach your son to play ball, robot emoji, can't allow me, can't win your wife back. So the way in which that robot and I told Dave this already. I think the takeaway from this episode of Storm of Spoilers is that Joanna is right. CG is bad. See Blop. And practical effects are good. See the dude in the robot suit in Netflix is Lost in Space.
Yeah, I mean,
it is nice how unabashedly a suit, yeah, a suit he is.
I love
as a guy
it.
Doing the robot walk, where it's like turn torso, then turn head.
Yeah, I love that great. Dude in the suit. He's pretty. He's fantastic. So, yeah, I care about that robot, and I do like the way that the design is partially inspired by the original robot, partially, like the little grabby claw stuff. And B, how he turns from like evil, like red screen, multiple arms. It's sort of like a Stitch. He's like like red screen, multiple arms, and then when he's nice, it's blue screen, too, like humanoid. You know what I mean? I like those distinctions. And then you've got like bad robot versus good robot fight and all of that. I don't know. I liked the robot stuff. I agree. I don't know that I necessarily need a whole planet of them, but we don't know that. You know, that's another thing that Dave brought up is like, we don't know that that's like their home planet or whatever. The robot just called it
Danger. He describes it as danger. Danger. Yeah.
Danger.
Yeah. My guess is that it starts up next season in the first episode. The engine goes crazy and it's like that episode of BSG where they like have to jump like every 33 minutes or something. That's how I would come back from that. And like they were there and now they're somewhere else.
I would have them go to that planet and it is all CGI Gary Oldman Spider-Smith. Just a whole race of Spider-Smiths.
Did you know the spiders came for Earth? To we get a whole planet to devour?
He
just wanted to eat humans.
He ate those ladies. Sucks. He ate Will's mom and then raised Will as
he
his own.
He ate Lacey Chabert, the first vlogger.
But he did not eat Blop.
Didn't eat Blop, apparently.
Oh, all man. Right. And I can't believe that he's foiled because the spiders eat their wounded and he gets a cut on his cheek. That is not an advanced race.
Yeah.
It's John Robinson anyway. Thinking on the spot.
Professor John Robinson.
Professor John Robinson. The smartest of the Robinsons.
The science and military all in one character.
Oh, and one leather suit. All right. Any other thoughts on Lost in Space Netflix?
Yes.
I'm looking forward. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I like the costumes generally. I can't remember if it's just the Dars who had to wear these like really dumb jackets that had like massive what looked like solar panels on them. Anyway, the scene where like with young Dar and Petty where they're like, you know, having their waterfall date or whatever, I got really distracted by how dumb his jacket is. Go ahead and look at it and I'm like that's no future technology. That is dumb now technology of these like giant unwieldy flaps of solar panel energy on his dumb jacket. But I liked the spacesuits. I like the everyday space wear. I like that Parker Posey somehow found scarves somewhere.
So many
wear.
Scarves.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk space fashion for a second. That's it. That's all for me.
Space fashion.
Space
Neil,
fashion.
Anything to add?
No, I liked it. It scratched a bunch of different pop cultural itches. That we've now discussed, and I think people should watch it. I'm ready. I'll watch season two, even if it's on this stupid alien planet.
Yeah, we're right at that period of time where your shows are good. Your normal TV shows, as I would classify them, are about to become very exciting and then disappear for months. So know that Lost in Space is waiting for you. And although it has some Netflix bloat, it's better than some other Lost in Space. Better than the two most recent Lost in Space we tried to make.
I mean, yeah.
So we narrowly avoided three strikes you're out on Lost in Space, just like we narrowly avoided a third strike on Spider-Man. So good to know. Ghostbusters only got one strike, though. That's too bad. All right. Next week, guys, it's a big one.
It's a huge one.
It's Infinity War. It's the Infinity War, the beginning of the war that goes on for forever and will never stop fighting it, and everybody will be simultaneously alive and dead like a Schrodinger's cat in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Is that yeah, what I think this we're movie's going to be about?
Aren't we going to do a little storm section right now?
We can if we want. So we're going to... Next week, we're going to talk about Infinity War. That podcast will definitely have a lot of spoilers because we will have seen it by then. And that we will be releasing it the night before it comes out, I believe, is the plan. So there are definitely going to be some Infinity War spoilers. I'm going to about do some speculation to hedge you out here. It's a story that has actually been sort of bouncing back and forth around because I think Marvel got a little worried about it. Yesterday, it was announced there was going to be a Marvel novel
about
Thanos.
Storm noises. I don't know.
If you don't want anything me to talk about, any speculation about Infinity War and how it ends,
yes.
Thank you. You've made it through Lost in Space. We'll see you next week. All right, here we go. There's a Thanos tie-in novel. Initially, it was reported as canonical. Now, the publisher is trying to walk that back. I'm thinking possibly because the description of the novel ends with this paragraph: learn the origins of the most formidable foe of the Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, Doctor Strange, and Black Panther have ever faced, a foe whom even a group of remarkable people pulled together to fight the battles nobody else could, will fail to stop.
Fail? What?
Sounds like this novel's coming out in November, so well after next week's Infinity War. It sounds like the Avengers lose the Infinity War.
What?
To Thanos, who collects all the stones next week.
You mean the bad guy wins part one of a two-parter?
It's not a two-parter, Joanna. No one's called it that. No one's referred to it as that in like 2 years. Avengers 4, the untitled Avengers 4, may or may not have Thanos in it. Who knows?
It's going to be all about Thanos from the sound of it. Is this going to be Avengers? All about Thanos
whatever
is in
happens,
charge now.
Yeah. Or whatever he does with that glove. He's got the power
Avengers,
to reshape reality.
The best we could assemble from what's left of half of humanity.
Thanos.
Yeah.
That's a long, that's not a great, it doesn't fit well on a poster, but they'll figure it out.
Well, I have some ideas about what Avengers 4 could be called, but we're going to have to definitely save that for next
week. Super Infinity Stones.
Infinity War. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's just still called Infinity War, and Marvel's like, didn't you know what Infinity means? Every Avengers movie is called Infinity War. But yeah, that's next week. We're going to do it.
It's going to be
it's
great.
It's finally going
to
happen.
Can't wait to see
it's
this movie.
A culmination of a bunch of stuff. I'm surprised. I'm going to speak for myself and then throw it to everybody else. I would have told you last year at this time I would have been sick of the MCU and not excited. I'm surprised that Marvel's been able to keep me pumped, considering we've known this is coming and we probably haven't seen anything like really unexpected in the trailers since the Super Bowl. Neil, how are you feeling?
I feel like I have no idea what the plot of this movie is. So that's probably a good thing.
Nice. Joanna, Infinity War, still interesting?
I'm setting my expectations super low so that I have the option of being pleasantly surprised. That being said, like, Wakanda has definitely gotten us all like a little bit more excited about the MCU, like excited to see Shuri and Okoye and all of those characters back. And you know they had me at Captain America's beard. And they won't ever lose me until he shaves it.
They gave Captain America a William Hurt Lost in Space 98 beard.
That's so good. he and Thor are both so beardy now. It's so good.
They are men. You know how I described it to somebody? Someone asked me earlier. They did not seem like they were a big like MCU fan. And they were like, well, these Avengers movies aren't all great. And I was like, well, like, what do you consider to be the last Avengers movie? And they're like, well, Age of Ultron. I was like, this is not like Age of Ultron. Different filmmakers. This is the Civil War filmmakers. And they were like, oh. So I do, to a certain extent, trust the Russos because Marvel seems to trust the Russos. So I think we're going to get a pretty decent little romp here. Most likely, it'll just be too much of whatever it is. That'll be the problem.
I was surprised that one of the first things that leaked was Arrested Development Easter egg. So I think once I got over that they're still those guys, I think that actually made me feel a little better about it. Because I think, yes, I had the same worries at some point that you did, Neil, about, or that your friend did, about Avengers movies. And I still sort of have it because I'm not sure how good the Russos are at really putting their stamp on something. but it's definitely them, and they're definitely all in for two more Avengers movies. So that's a good sign.
Two more after this?
No, this one and then Avengers. Okay.
Whew. I was like, oh my God. How many Avengers movies they need to make?
I think the thing about Civil War is that I like Civil War. I've seen it multiple times now. But it's not something that I ever think about when I'm not watching it, really. That's not true of the original Avengers or the best, or Winter Soldier, which we can fight about whether or not that's a good movie.
Civil War.
Thanks. Dave doesn't agree. but Civil War, do you know what I mean? Civil War has that big tarmac fight and it's fun and it's zippy and it moves and it's
they get,
but it's not, it doesn't stick with me in any way, you know?
Yeah. They get a little more momenty. It's the moments you remember, but I don't, I would say that most people would be hard pressed to remember who the villain was of that movie.
Oh, Daniel Brühl is so fun, though.
I mean, he's great, but it's that wasn't really that important. What was important was the tarmac fight, and they introduced Black Panther, and they killed Black Panther's dad, and Steve and Bucky should kiss.
Steve and Bucky.
The whole movie right there.
Mission Report, December 16, 1991. No. if ever there was a classic villain catchphrase, it was Mission Report, December 16, 1991. Steve and Bucky are the reason for the season. The reason for everything.
And they're back together in Avengers Infinity War.
Yes.
I'm more excited just knowing how everything works, I am gearing up for the week of being very excited that I got to see Avengers Infinity War, followed by the 10 months of everybody saying absolutely nothing but trying to promote two other Marvel movies before the next Avengers movie. It's going to be the type of show that you might need a show like this to navigate yourself through. That's why we'll be back next week. Infinity War, so spoilers. Until then, guys, where could people find more of your work on the internet? Let's start with Joanna Robinson this week.
You can find me on vanityfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. We're getting into Westworld season, which means I'll be doing Decoding Westworlds and also a Vanity Fair podcast called Still Watching Westworld. So for all your Westworld needs. And I think we'll be talking about Westworld at some point on the show as well. But I just thought that I would plug those other two shows. Okay, that's it.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Yes, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com where I... we're doing a really fun thing next week. We are doing a great debate sort of thing. We call it Debate Week, where I have 16 writers that are going to present arguments for the best summer movie ever, and then people are going to vote at the end of it, and we have some really fun articles lined up for very big fun movies, so stay tuned to that. I will not write any, but I will edit all of them. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Rejects. I will be tweeting about weird stuff.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I'll pin some work to the top of the page there if you want to read anything. Otherwise, it's just crazy opinions and weird realizations that I cook food you didn't know about. And until next week, make sure you don't fall down. We could go through the planet.